This is Audible.
Bitcoin. Hard money you can't fuck with. Written by Jason A. Williams. Narrated by Jessica Walker. Chapter 1. Money printer go brrr. I was on a beach in Peru, surfing and enjoying my birthday when the reports started coming in. A scary new virus out of China had the city of Wuhan locked down. Within weeks, it spread to Italy, then Seattle, then New York. A full-blown pandemic. The whole world went into panic. Lockdowns, shelter-in-place orders, travel bans, total chaos. I can still remember the eerie streets of Times Square, billboards flashing Coca-Cola signs to no one, stock market tickers bleeding red, the S&P 500 down 33%. In the coming months, 55 million people across America lost their jobs. Small businesses were crushed. Restaurants, barbershops, salons, car dealers, retailers, decimated. At one point, almost half the nation was unemployed. Riots broke out across the country, fueled by decades of racism and inequality. Tear gas flooded the streets of Washington, D.C., and rioters clashed with police. Looters smashed up storefronts. People died on the sidewalk. On Wall Street, traders were reeling from the fastest crash in history. $16 trillion wiped out in a matter of weeks. The Dow suffered its biggest single-day points loss in history. The price of oil briefly turned negative, and newspaper headlines screamed about a second Great Depression. This was it. This was the final crash to end all crashes, except the powers that be couldn't let that happen. You probably saw the headlines. The Fed will pump another $2.3 trillion into the economy. Congress agrees $2 trillion stimulus package. The US has thrown more than $6 trillion at the coronavirus crisis. This is more money than we even knew existed. When did we start throwing around the trillion figure? And where the hell was all this money coming from? They printed it. In a small room in Washington, D.C., 12 central bankers at the Federal Reserve, mostly old white men, made a decision. How could they stop the economy from crashing into a depression? Print more money. I'm not exaggerating. Federal Reserve Chairman Jerome Powell was later asked, "Is it fair to say you simply flooded the system with money?" "Yes, we did," he replied. "Where does it come from? Do you just print it?" In the video interview, you can see him shuffle awkwardly. He knew he was about to shatter everything we thought we knew about the dollar. "We print it digitally. We, as a central bank, we have the ability to create money. Just let that sink in a minute." The Federal Reserve, the bank of banks, created money out of thin air, and they pass it out to other banks and corporations like candy. The Fed pressed the button and added trillions of dollars to their balance sheet. They promised infinite cash if it was needed. The money rained down, and it worked. Stock markets began to recover. By August, stocks were back to record highs. Wall Street was saved, again. But something didn't feel right. On April 9th, a CNBC headline cheered the stock market's best week since 1938. But underneath the headline, in the very same screenshot, was another. More than 16 million Americans have lost their jobs in 3 weeks. How could this be right? The lines for food banks in New York were 8 blocks long. Most were struggling to pay their rent. Small companies were going bust. Mom-and-pop businesses that had survived decades were suddenly gone. Young people had their future ripped out of their hands. But at least the stock market was going up. This is what happens when you create money out of thin air and hand it out to those at the top. The rich get richer. The poor get screwed. This is how our money system works. And here's the worst part. Every time they flood the market with freshly printed dollars, they devalue the cash in your pocket. If you print quadrillions, the quadrillions mean nothing. They've been doing it for decades. You can literally see it happening over time. Here's a graph of the dollar's purchasing power over the last century. By the way, this is the Fed's own chart. They know what they're doing. They are devaluing your savings every year, like going out and setting fire to your cash. This has been going on quietly for a long time, but never on this scale. In just 3 months of 2020, the Fed expanded its balance sheet by $3 trillion. Put it this way, that's more new dollars in a few weeks than the first 240 years of American history. Insane. The world started waking up to what was happening. In a small corner of the internet, a new meme began circulating. Money printer go brr. It depicts a manic-looking banker printing endless dollars to keep the stock market from falling. The meme appeared in Bloomberg, Forbes, The Wall Street Journal, and suddenly people started asking questions. What happens if we keep printing endless money? Does the dollar lose value? Why do we pay taxes if we can just print the cash? Wait, what exactly is money? I'm reminded of this quote from Henry Ford. It is well enough that people of the nation do not understand our banking and monetary system. For if they did, I believe there would be a revolution before tomorrow morning. I think the revolution is coming. People are starting to realize that something is wrong with our money, even if they can't put their finger on it. Why do I get no interest at my bank anymore? How come my parents bought a house for $50,000, but now a bungalow costs $1 million? Why is the stock market going up, but millions of people can't afford food? What actually happened to the banks in the 2008 financial crisis? On top of that, we're shifting into a whole new era. You can feel it. Riots in the streets, a rise in populism, rising inequality, anger, and division. Throughout history, these moments happen right before a breaking point. Some call it a fourth turning, a generational cycle that brings shattering change and revolution. It feels like we're right on the edge. These fourth turnings also bring a change in the money system. The last time around, in the 1930s, we established the dollar as the world's global reserve currency. This time around, it'll be Bitcoin. To truly understand Bitcoin, you have to unlearn everything you know about money. That's the process I went through to write this book. And when you look back through the history of money, you end up at a pretty scary conclusion. The dollar is nearing the end of its lifespan as the dominant currency. It's not as scary as it sounds. Every dominant currency in history has eventually been replaced. Shells, gold coins, the Dutch florin, the British pound, and infinite currencies like the dollar have always ended in disaster. When you start pulling at this thread, you realize that Bitcoin is the only logical conclusion. This magic internet money, created by a ghost-like figure, emerged out of the 2008 financial crisis as a screw you to the rigged banking system. But in 2020, we realized it wasn't just the banks that are broken. It's the whole system of money. We need an alternative. A new form of money, completely independent of banks and governments. A native digital currency for a digital world. A whole new financial system. And most important of all, Bitcoin is scarce. Look back through history and you'll realize that all the best forms of currency have one key feature: scarcity. But not anymore, not the dollar. This era of insane money printing is not normal. It's an experiment. And whenever it is tried, throughout history it has failed, every single time. Most of us think Bitcoin is crazy the first time we hear about it. A scam, a Ponzi scheme, a bubble, money for hackers and drug dealers. But it's not. As we'll discover, Bitcoin is the best form of money ever invented. Not only that, it's the best performing financial asset on the planet, swallowing everything in its path. It will devour government currencies that are printing themselves into oblivion, and it will establish itself as the next global reserve currency. It might take years, decades, but it's happening, and there's one simple reason why. Bitcoin is hard money you can't fuck with. Chapter 2. Magic Internet Money. September 2017. The price of Bitcoin just doubled in 2 weeks and hit a new record high. Things were getting crazy. Guys on YouTube were boasting about their crypto riches and their new Lambos. Paris Hilton was shilling obscure cryptocurrencies on Twitter. Nipsey Hussle was planning a crypto utopia in Europe. Something was bubbling up. You could feel it. Then my phone rang and shattered everything. It was my wife. Jason, there are two FBI agents at the house. They want to speak to you. My heart stopped. What do they want? They won't say. Shit. I tried to calm my breathing down, composed myself, then got on the phone with them. They wanted to meet somewhere. I told them the first thing that comes into my head. Can we meet at Dunkin' Donuts? Dunk's is my de facto office when I'm not working at the tire recycling plant.
Good Wi-Fi, $2 coffee. I'll stay there all day. I walked in like normal. Coffee machine steaming, people buzzing around. But this time, I couldn't relax. I got there first and sat in the back. I was wearing my gear from the plant. Reflective vest, camo hat, beard and Ray-Bans. My usual look. Not exactly inconspicuous. That's when they pulled up. Like it was right out of a movie. A black Lincoln town car stopped out front. Two guys in suits got out of the vehicle. They made a beeline right to me. No messing around, they knew exactly who I was. Jason Williams? Hi. I shook their hands, tried to stay calm. They introduced themselves and put a manila folder on the table in front of me. I remembered something I heard a long time ago. If you tell the truth, you don't have to remember what you said. Just tell the truth. I started off with the basics. My background, education, my work, my patents. Who, where, what, why, how? And then they said something that scared the hell out of me. Are these your bank transactions? They flipped the manila folder open and showed me a piece of paper. It was my bank account records. Every transaction, every payment, everything. You just don't get this information unless there's something big going on. My heart was thumping. Yeah, that's me. I was nervous. You bought 500 ASIC Bitcoin miners last year and imported them from China. I nodded. That's a lot of computers. It takes a lot of computers to mine a lot of Bitcoin. The other guy showed me a piece of paper. And this is a record of where they got checked at the border? I looked at the paper and nodded again. Turns out it's pretty hard to import 500 ASIC miners. There's a whole aluminum extrusion issue. I remember they were stacked up in pallets at the border until I got the all clear. Help me out, the FBI agent leaned in. If someone buys 500 crypto miners, they need a lot of electricity to power it, right? A lot, I said. So why aren't I seeing a spike in energy use around here? I should be seeing enough power to light up Times Square. He was exaggerating, but I knew what he meant. This is how the FBI tracks bad actors. Spikes in energy often lead them to a meth lab or a shady crypto mining operation. In my case, the suspicious activity is no energy use. Who buys $1 million worth of Bitcoin mining equipment without consuming any extra energy? What's going on here? I tried to explain that I run a renewable energy plant, fueled by recovered energy from the tires we process. We feed the energy straight into the mining rigs. I'm self-sufficient, off the grid. Their confused looks told me they weren't buying it. Can I just show you? I got in the truck with them and directed them to the PRTI power plant. It's a 10-minute drive through North Carolina. Giant conifer trees line the roadside. We made the journey in stony silence. After a while, one of the agents asked me, "Have you heard of the Darknet Task Force?" "Yeah, I've heard of the Darknet Task Force. It's the FBI branch that took down the Silk Road. The Amazon of drugs powered by Bitcoin in 2013. It was one of Bitcoin's earliest use cases and why crypto became tainted with illicit activity. I know I have nothing to hide, but it still freaks me out." After they busted the Silk Road, they put Ross Ulbricht, the founder, in prison for life without parole. Like I said, they're not messing around. Finally, we drove down a dirt track to the industrial plant. Two 18-wheelers were parked up, full of tires to unload. Six processing towers stood in the middle, warehouses to the back. "The trucks bring the tires to the plant," I said as we got out of the car. "We toss them into these cylinders and heat them from the bottom. At a certain temperature and pressure, the tires go from being semi-solid to gas." "And where does Bitcoin come into this?" the agents asked. "Through here." I led them through a door to the side of the warehouse and up a staircase. In front of us is the world's first waste-to-energy cryptocurrency mine. I have fans moving the total volume of the air out of the mine 6 times a minute. This keeps the miners in an operating environment that maintains their efficiency. The computers are processing so much information they can overheat without being kept cool or having enough fresh air. The rigs are stacked up to the ceiling on metal shelves, and there's a low hum from the computers. The air is moving like a wind tunnel, hot columns and fresh air columns, small LED lights flashing all over the room. All of the outputs from the plant are energy. "Well, except for a small amount of bronze-coated steel I capture from the tires," I said. "So I divert power into here. I pointed at the computer hardware flashing in front of us. I use the power to mine cryptocurrency, Bitcoin, Ethereum. This is how new Bitcoin is created, or minted. People like me run huge computer systems to keep the Bitcoin network running. I'm processing transactions and keeping the network secure, and I'm rewarded in new Bitcoin and new Ethereum for doing it. I watch their faces take it all in. So that's why there's no spike in energy around here. Exactly, I said. It's legit. In fact, it's the biggest waste-to-energy cryptocurrency mining operation in the world that I know of. Back when I first got into Bitcoin, this was the lightbulb moment for me. I wasn't a radical libertarian who liked the idea of stateless currency. I wasn't a cryptography nerd or anything like that. I'm a scientist, an engineer who loves building things, and experimenting. Plugging in a Bitcoin miner for the first time and watching it work changed everything. After that, I went all in, but I wasn't always convinced. Wait, what do you mean we should invest in Bitcoin? Like almost everyone who hears about Bitcoin, it took a while to click. I was actually pretty pissed the first time my business partner told me he'd bought some cryptocurrency mining rigs. I think everyone has the same reaction when they first hear about it. Magic internet money. Seriously? I'd recently sold my healthcare business for a 9-figure exit. More money than I ever knew existed when I was a kid. After 2 decades of building that wealth, I figured my only job now was protect it and grow it with smart and careful investments. I put a bunch into real estate and made a few early-stage investments in startups. Later I met my partner, Anthony Pomp Pompliano, and we set up our first venture fund out of a Starbucks in North Carolina. We deployed some capital in seed stage and pre-IPO companies like Lyft and SpaceX. But cryptocurrency? I needed to know more. I'm just saying, there's something there. We should consider it, Pomp told me on this long drive to meet an investor. All right, I said. We've got a 3-hour car journey to kill time. Let's get into it. Hard money you can't fuck with. This small section of the book took me longer than any other, because describing Bitcoin in one paragraph is almost impossible. I wanted to sum it up as neatly as I could for you. After writing and deleting thousands of words, I finally figured it out in one sentence. Bitcoin is just hard money you can't fuck with. It's really that simple. I mean this in 2 different ways. 1. No one can mess with your money. Bitcoin is completely independent. It exists outside of the banks. It doesn't belong to any government. It doesn't care about borders. It's open to everyone, no matter who you are or where you live. It can't be controlled by any one person, group, or company. The network has never been hacked, and it can't be shut down. Bitcoiners call this censorship resistant. Absolutely anyone can use Bitcoin, and no one can stop you from making transactions. A completely parallel financial system controlled by no one. Bitcoin could be the incorruptible substance that transforms humanity. This is really big. 2. No one can fuck with the Bitcoin money supply. As I explained, the US can print as much new currency as it likes, trillions of dollars of it. And we know this devalues the money. Bitcoin is different. The supply is fixed at 21 million Bitcoin, hard-coded and programmed centuries into the future. Completely transparent and fair. This is what I mean by hard money. The supply is fixed. It can't be inflated. You just cannot fuck with Bitcoin in any way. No one can. It's bulletproof. Neutral and impartial to everything else going on in the world. That's why it's the perfect global reserve currency for the next digital era. Obviously, that's not how Pomp and I talked about it. Back in the car that day, we started with the basics. Magic internet money. Bitcoin is digital money. You can send it to anyone in the world instantly over the internet. As easy as email. Every transaction is encrypted and locked with a cryptographic signature, hence cryptocurrency. There's Bitcoin, and there's Bitcoin. There's Bitcoin the currency, with a lowercase b, and Bitcoin the network, or protocol, with an uppercase b, that makes it all work. Think of the Bitcoin network like the internet, a web of computers that sends transactions back and forth. No banks. Bitcoin is designed to cut out the trusted third party, like banks. There should be no middleman like PayPal or Bank of America controlling your cash. We shouldn't have to trust a bank to hold our money. No governments. Bitcoin is the first truly global currency. It goes beyond borders and can't be controlled by a government or central banks. Actually, no central authority at all. No one owns the Bitcoin network. There's no central authority in control of Bitcoin. There's no CEO, no headquarters, no master computer with a reset password, no central database to hack. Again, it's like the internet. No one owns the internet. No government can shut it all down because it exists on millions of computers all at once. This is what Bitcoiners call decentralized.
So who created this thing? That's the best thing about it. No one knows. Some anonymous person or group who calls themselves Satoshi Nakamoto. They appeared out of nowhere in 2008 and published the Bitcoin white paper. 3 years later, Satoshi completely disappeared, logged off, stopped working on it, and vanished. It was a genius move, creating a completely unstoppable movement independent of a central body or figure. Bitcoin belongs to everyone. If you don't know who created it, you can't force them to shut it down. It's like V for Vendetta. In the movie, an anonymous person called V masterminds a revolution, then disappears. At the end of the movie, thousands of people show up to overthrow the system, all wearing the V masks. No one knows who started it, and now it's too big to stop. It's the same with Bitcoin. Bitcoin is money for the new digital era. As we talked it through in the car that day, the wheels started to turn for me. My first thought was, this is like video game money. I'm a big gamer, and that's really how I first understood it. I knew we were moving into a digital economy, and we need a native internet currency that goes beyond borders. That's how Twitter CEO Jack Dorsey describes it too. The internet is going to have a native currency, so let's not wait for it to happen. Let's help it happen. It makes total sense. Our bank systems and international payment rails were built in the 70s and 80s. They're not fit for a digital world. I can send an email to anyone in the world in seconds. I can call you from the other side of the planet and talk to you in real time. But it takes me 5 days to wire you money. It's insane. I could get on a plane with a suitcase full of dollars, fly to Australia, drive across the country and personally hand you some cash faster than wiring it from my bank account. Most of the time, sending money abroad is just an inconvenience. But think about a migrant worker trying to send some money back home to his family in a different country. The whole system is a total disaster. Then I look at my kids and watch them play video games with other people on the other side of the planet. They'll never understand a system where you wait 5 days to send money. They just won't. They'll expect instant, digitally native currency. There was something else that got me excited. The establishment, like banks and traditional investors, hated it. Warren Buffett famously called Bitcoin rat poison squared. JP Morgan boss Jamie Dimon said it was a fraud and would fire any employee trading it. Nobel Prize-winning economist Joseph Stiglitz claimed it was only used for nefarious activity and said no government can allow that. I guess the rebellious contrarian inside me was drawn to it because of this. There was one other time in my life when I remember such a violent backlash, when I started my first company. I was in my early 20s doing a surgical residency at Yale. My whole life had focused and prepared to practice medicine. But when I finally got there, I was really confused by what I saw. Doctors and nurses were angry and pissed off. Customer service was completely non-existent. Patients were treated pretty cruelly, I thought, with total disregard for the cost of the care they were trying to get access to. So I came up with an idea to take all the non-life-threatening emergencies, broken bones, allergic reactions, colds, coughs, and put them in a retail setting. Abandoned restaurants, old blockbuster video buildings, etc. I called it FastMed, an urgent care facility outside the hospital. People thought I was totally crazy. They hated the idea because it was disruptive and new and scary. Whenever you get this much backlash from the established industry, it's because it's a threat. And that means you've tapped into something special. I dropped out immediately and started FastMed. We went on to open up 123 locations across the country. I felt this fierce resistance to change when I started FastMed. And I could feel it with Bitcoin. I still feel it. Whenever you get that backlash from inside an industry, you know you're onto something. Come on, how do you hack this thing? After the basics, Pomp and I spent most of the drive talking about this. Digital money on the internet. There's got to be a way to hack it. It's never been hacked, Pomp said. Come on, I hear about Bitcoin hacks all the time. It's never been hacked. He was right. Hackers have stolen Bitcoin, little b, out of people's digital wallets if they don't hold them securely. But the actual Bitcoin network, the big B, is a fortress of computers all over the world that are fighting to protect the system. Michael Saylor calls it a swarm of cyber hornets, exponentially growing ever smarter, faster, and stronger behind a wall of encrypted energy, and it's never been breached. The swarm of cyber hornets. My giant setup at the energy plant is one of thousands, maybe millions of computers running Bitcoin. I'm one of the cyber hornets. I'm processing Bitcoin transactions and keeping the network running. Not literally. The Bitcoin software is doing it for me. Anyone can download it if you've got enough processing power. This is what makes Bitcoin revolutionary. Instead of one computer at a bank keeping track of all the money, centralized, there are thousands of computers all over the world, decentralized. Hacking Bitcoin is basically a game of whack-a-mole. You can hack me and my rig, and trust me, I have been. But if you try to do something shady, like change the supply of Bitcoin or give yourself more money, all the other computers would notice and reject it. It's called consensus. You need a majority of Bitcoin users to agree before any change is made. The only way to hack Bitcoin is to somehow control more than 50% of all the computers or processing power. Basically impossible at this point. This is one thing people don't talk about enough. Bitcoin isn't just a currency or financial system. It's the strongest computer network in history. And it only has one job: protecting hard money. It's a $280 billion bug bounty. The biggest reward for hackers in history if they could figure it out, and no one's broken it. Seriously, this is the strongest army of computers on the planet acting like a fortress to protect your money. And people still think this thing doesn't have value. How is new Bitcoin created? This is where it starts to get a little bit complicated, so let's make it easier. I love physics, but it wasn't complicated textbooks that got me hooked. It was this one physics book that was written like a comic. Do you guys remember the Harold and Purple Crayon books? Harold took his purple crayon everywhere and drew paths, boats, hot air balloons, trees, and mountains as he walked through the story. This is how we'll explain complicated things through the book. Harold draws a computer, just like mine at the power plant. He spends all day at the computer processing Bitcoin transactions. For that work, Harold is rewarded. Ka-ching! He gets some newly created Bitcoin. Although, it's a little more complicated than that. Harold is actually competing against all the other computers on the Bitcoin network. They all want that sweet Bitcoin money, so they turn up the energy and try to work harder and faster than Harold. This is called mining. Here's how it works. Harold bundles up lots of new Bitcoin transactions and puts them in a block. Then Harold draws a math puzzle. If Harold's computer is the first to solve the math puzzle, his block gets added to a long chain, hence blockchain. Ka-ching! He's rewarded with that sweet Bitcoin. Every 10 minutes, there's a new block with 6.25 BTC in it, and the competition starts again. In the early days, you could mine Bitcoin with a basic laptop. Nowadays, you need a ton of power and a lot of specialized equipment. Pomp and I talked about this mining competition back and forth in the car that day. I remember looking at Pomp and smiling. Dude! I run an energy plant. A few weeks later, I was buying as much mining equipment as I could get my hands on. Literally, I was buying old equipment from people's college dorm rooms. Then I got on a plane to Singapore, China, and ordered hundreds of mining rigs. We were all in. These are all the practical aspects of Bitcoin, and they're super interesting to me. I love the engineering aspect of it, and I could see we needed some kind of digitally native global currency. It was a good experiment, but I didn't think it was big enough to replace the dollar. Then one thing changed everything. Only 21 million Bitcoin will ever exist. Hang on, wait. There are only 21 million Bitcoin? My brain went into overdrive when we started talking about this back in the car. I might not understand cryptography, but I know about scarcity. Gold, artwork, limited edition sneakers, Pokemon cards. Humans love scarcity. It's like something primal in our brain. We just love to collect scarce assets. Yeah, the supply is hard-coded. There will never be more than 21 million BTC. This is the game changer. Remember, every other form of currency on the planet right now is infinite. Dollars, euros, yen, they all have an endless supply. Money printer go brrr. the Fed literally told us themselves. There is infinite cash at the Federal Reserve. 21 million. I can't stress how important this is. The whole next chapter is dedicated to it. Really, this whole book comes down to Bitcoin's hard-coded 21 million supply cap.